A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Smirchpod Royale.
It's our business and your people get killed. We both know that.
Then, when this mission is over, I will kill you.
Within minutes, New York and Moscow will cease to exist.
Daniel on there.
I know, James. I'm sorry.
I have to get her off.
How?
Well, well, well. A British agent in love with a Russian agent.
Your time's running out, Stromberg.
Yours too, Mr. Bond. Yours too.
It's the biggest. It's the best. It's Bond. And beyond.
Hello and welcome to Smirchpod Royale, a podcast celebrating all the Bond films by those who enjoy, hate, or, you know, just aren't asked about them. Hosted by me, John Ring. This week, one of our submarines is missing, and we're working together with a XXX agent to find out exactly who stole all the semen. Yes, it's the spy who loved me. And joining me to get our teeth into the mystery is comedian, actor, and medium, Paul Litchfield. Hello, Paul.
Hello, John.
How are you?
I'm very well. I can't believe I'm going to talk about my second favourite James Bond film.
Isn't it exciting?
I love Spy Love Me.
It's perfect.
I love it so much. I think it's perfect Roger Moore. Perfect Roger. I think he was really happy when he made this as well.
Yeah, I think he says it's his favourite one.
I think he said it was his favourite one to do, yeah. Mm. So I'm really happy that Roger was happy doing it.
Yeah.
And I thought we might, because I thought we might try, because as you know, I am an internationally renowned psychic.
Yes.
And once, a few years ago, I managed to summon the wonderful disembodied spirit of Terry Wogan.
Oh, yes, that's right, yes.
Who spoke to us about Without a Clue, didn't he?
Without a Clue, yeah.
And I've had a lot of time during lockdown to try and hone my skills and target very specific people. Mm. And I just thought, why don't we get James Bond himself?
Oh.
Wouldn't that be amazing if we could get Roger to talk about his own film?
That would be incredible if you could master it.
I mean, I can try. I tried it this morning and I got Lazenby, and that was horrible. I just couldn't shake him off, and he ended up making a bloody goulash with me, but he kept chipping in like, "Oh, this is how I do it, mate." And I was like, "No, no."
That must have been harrowing for him because he's not dead.
No, exactly. Well, that's what he kept on going on about. Why am I here? What are you making? Yeah. Show me the ingredients. And then he was all, "But oh, you're not using cup sizes, and I'm using imperial measurements." And I was like, "Yes, I am. This is England, George."
Yeah.
And he was whinging about that. And then eventually I managed to vanquish him. And then I had sort of like half an hour with John Belushi, and I had to go outside. It was just, ugh.
Yeah.
But I've been thinking about Roger since I knew we were going to be doing this today. And I tentatively went out with my mind, and I think I've got him.
Okay.
I've got positive vibes coming back from him. And I ate a ham hock terrine for lunch, which I knew was one of his favourites.
One of his favourites, yeah.
Yeah, so I reckon we'll be able to get him. I mean, I don't know what he remembers about Spy Love Me or how amicable he is, but I think he's a pretty good egg, isn't he?
Oh, Roger? Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I'm looking forward to meeting him if it works.
Okay, well, shall I try and get him now?
Yes, please.
Okay. Roger, are you there, love? yeah, hang on. Oh. I think he's coming through.
Why, hello.
Sir Roger Moore.
Hello.
Hello, Roger, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Who's this?
My name's John Rain. I'm the host of the podcast Smash Pod.
Oh, I listen from up in heaven. I have to say, I absolutely love the show.
Oh, thank you, Roger. That's amazing.
You're more than welcome.
Wow. So how is it up there?
Ah, you know, it's 00 heaven.
Oh, that's wonderful. I'm sorry, I'm a bit lost for words because I've always wanted to meet you.
Well, I tell you what, I remember a lot of hijinks and fun when we were doing Spy Love Me.
Oh, wow.
Would you believe it? I was 50 years old at the time.
Wow.
Yeah, so I wasn't quite in the back girdle and the brace department. And all my hair was my own.
Mm, of course.
But wonderful, wonderful fun.
The
whole experience from Sardinia to Scotland, from Luxor to London. Mm. We had a wonderful time.
Is there anything particularly that sticks out in your mind?
I do remember my most abiding memories of Spy Love Me was shingles, food poisoning, and a singed anus.
Singed anus?
Yes, and we'll get to that bit a bit later.
Oh, I look forward to hearing about that.
Wonderful. Now, I believe you sort of go through the movie as it's happening, and I sort of chip in ad hoc.
Yes, is that okay?
Wonderful. Why don't you take it away?
Okay, well, we open with a new gun barrel.
Which first time exciting. Used, I believe.
Yeah, you're wearing a wonderful set of flares.
Wonderful flares in the 70s, and you must remember this was 1977.
Mm.
So flares were very much de rigueur.
Would you believe this, Roger? That was the year I was born.
Get away with you.
No, it's true.
Ooh, young whippersnapper.
Mm. How did you feel about them using the flares gun barrel for the rest of your tenure, even though you finished in 1985?
I didn't really have much say, I have to say, when it came to such decisions. As I got more comfortable with Bond, my take on Bond, I used to chip in with suggestions, but Cubby quite often used to say, no, I'm afraid it's not up to you. Mm. There are a few ad libs that made it into this film and in other subsequent films.
Mm.
But as you know, when I wasn't doing Bond, I was doing a lot of things. So Bond was very important to me at the time. But
sure.
In between, I couldn't care less. I was doing other wonderful things.
So these flares are quite big, though. How are they to wear? I mean, they look like...
They are a nightmare to wear, especially in high wind.
Mm.
There were times where I had to have paperweights sewn into the bottom so that I wouldn't drift over the dunes.
Yes, is it true that when you were filming in Sardinia, there was quite a high breeze and you were actually blown into Switzerland?
Yes, I'm afraid that did happen on numerous occasions, which is why I always had my passport details stitched into my suit.
That's a good idea.
In case Interpol were asking questions.
Mm.
Yes.
And presumably when you were finished being blown away, there was quite a gap in there to get some air to land safely.
Well, yes, you could often use them as a sort of rudimentary parachute.
Mm.
Quite often I would land at sea.
Mm.
But because Bond is a naval commander, I was perfectly at home.
Good. Well, talking of sea,
yes,
we begin the film where a British nuclear submarine,
yes,
is
basically gobbled up.
Yes, yeah, gobbled up by a big tanker.
Big bag tanker.
Mm. And then a Russian nuclear submarine is also gobbled up.
Yes, yeah, so you immediately know that there are many, many nations at peril at this point.
Mm. And so General Gogol of the KGB.
Wonderful actor. Wonderful actor. Wonderful man. Rather good at Parcheesi.
Oh, really?
I'll tell you that. We used to play a lot offset.
Mm.
And I remember once we played strip Parcheesi and after a few rum and cokes at the bar. And that actually got a little bit too revealing. All I'll say is that man has birthmarks that one should not talk about.
Sure. Sure. Okay. Well, he calls his agent Triple X, who is in bed with her lover.
Now, that's poor old Michael Billington. Now, Michael, I don't know if you're aware, but he thought at one point he might get a pop-up Bond.
Yeah, he had many screen tests.
He had screen tests, but Cubby Broccoli realised quite early on that actually he was even hairier than Connery.
Yes.
And he actually said to me in private that he actually looked like Chewbacca's taint. And decided that they weren't going to use him, especially during water scenes, because he basically looked like a bag of wool. So he didn't make it, I'm afraid, and he got rather short billing in this film, and I think there was a little bit of animosity there. But luckily I wasn't on set at the time, so our paths didn't cross.
Well, he hands the phone over to Triple X, so it's a bit of a kind of, it's not him, it's the lady who's the agent.
Barbara Bach. That was a beautiful woman. A beautiful, beautiful woman. And she was an absolute joy to work with, I will have to say. Again, a little bit of animosity when we first met. I didn't know this because we have a second home in Monte Carlo. And Barbara was actually our neighbour, although I hadn't met her at that point. And unfortunately, there was a little bit of a contretemps as my wife had planted some yam trees in the corner of our property, which overhang onto her property, and some of our yams were ripening and falling into a koi carp pond, and the koi carp were eating them and poisoned and were dying. And she wrote a letter to the Monaco government, and we had to pay a fine. And there's a little bit of animosity there, but we invited them round to dinner, and then after that we sorted it all out. And I believe we did take down the yam tree in the end. So there's a tiny bit of animosity on that part, but mostly I have to say it was between Barbara and my wife.
Sure.
Yeah.
You didn't fancy Get Back?
What do you mean?
No, sorry. She later married Ringo Starr, of course.
She did indeed, yes. I believe that was because she actually had what is now known by doctors as a tin ear. she pretty much became deaf as a post towards the end. So she didn't have to hear what he was doing.
Was there any animosity there? Because I believe you were originally set to do Thomas the Tank Engine.
I was originally going to do all the voices for Thomas the Tank Engine. And then Ringo scuppered me at the last minute. I almost got the job as the Fat Controller. But then I just went, you know what, Ringo, I'll leave it to you. And I was very busy at the moment. You know, then I was doing adverts for the post office. My work at UNICEF had taken over.
Of course.
And, of course, my daughter was doing very well doing adverts for Scottish Windows.
That's right, yeah. They were very good windows.
Wonderful windows.
So, meanwhile, M asks where Bond is, and apparently he's on a mission in Austria.
That's right.
So M orders you to pull out.
Wonderful, wonderful quip there.
Because you are...
I'm in bed with a wonderful, beautiful woman, all in furs.
In front of an open fire.
Wonderful stuff. And that's perfect Bond, isn't it?
Yeah, and then you get a message printed out on a diner label from your Seiko watch.
One of Q's gadgets. Now, I believe you've got some rather interesting theories about Desmond Llewellyn and his rather pudgy fingers, is that right?
Yes, he has. He unfortunately was cursed with... large fingers.
That's absolutely... Do you know what? I didn't notice until I started listening to Smirch Pods up in heaven. And you're absolutely right. They look a little bit like a ring of Cumberland sausages in a rucksack. Don't they? I will tell you this. I know for a fact that Desmond was a member of the Masonic Lodge, and he used to have his ring widened every 2 years. So I'll just say that. So
that's an interesting theory.
I think your theory about his pudgy fingers actually may be right.
Well, the lady you're romancing asks where he's going.
Yes.
Where you're going, and you say that something came up.
Something came up, and she, of course, turns out to be a rotter. She's a spy.
Yeah.
She alerts the rather alarming henchmen on their skis to give chase.
Well, this is a good bit because we get the composer of this film was Marvin Hamlisch.
Marvin Hamlisch, wonderful, wonderful composer. Did some of the best music ever to James Bond, I believe. I'm never going to poo-poo John Barry.
No.
But again, I believe that Hamlisch's music pretty much suited my Bond. A bit more playful, a bit more fun.
Well, we get Bond 77, which is a...
That's a beautiful piece of work, isn't it?
It makes me think of you having some disco dancing while that's happening.
Yeah, well, I've disco danced with the best of them. In fact, I seem to remember I did a 24-hour disco telethon once.
Did you?
Yes. It was in aid of workers who were being knocked unconscious or receiving concussion whilst grabbing coconuts. And we decided to raise some money for them because they were getting no financial help down in the Maldives. And I was holidaying there at the time. And it was me and Barbara Woodhouse and Russ Abbott.
Wow.
And we did a 24-hour dance-a-thon.
Disco dance.
It was a lot of fun. Yes, yeah. All disco dancing.
Wow.
And we even did that wonderful thing where you go underneath the pole.
Limbo.
Limbo. That was great. Of course, poor old Barbara was so small, she could just walk under. But a lot of fun. And yeah. I believe we helped a lot of coconut workers.
How much did you raise, if you don't mind me asking?
I don't know what the conversion rate was back then, but I think it was around $900.
Wow, that's a lot of money for coconut workers.
Absolutely, yes. Well, you actually got most of them wearing hard hats, which really helped with the way they plied their trade.
I'd like to ask you a question, if you don't mind, about
a
man named Willie Bogner.
Ah, Willie, yes.
Mm. Now, he obviously shot all the ski sequences, and he was very adept at filming while going backwards, which made your stunt performer life a lot easier, obviously.
Absolutely, yes. That I believe that's the best opening Bond sequence there is.
Yes, no, I agree.
Because I remember when we went to the premiere and I was on a press junket in Japan, and the moment where I career off the cliff and you think that's the end for Bond, and there's that wonderful gap, and then suddenly the parachute unfurls, the Union Jack. The people were standing and cheering to the rafters.
And I
think it's iconic.
Oh, it is. How did it make you feel?
It made me very proud. There was a little joke. The stuntman who did that originally used a different parachute because we didn't want to risk the Union Jack parachute having a rip or a tear during the actual take. So he used a different parachute. And unbeknownst to him, the parachute that he used was essentially a sort of picture of Oswald Mosley, which caused a lot of consternation.
I'm sure.
But he eventually saw the funny side, because apparently the stuntman came from a long line of absolute fascists.
Right, sure.
So we just thought that was rather funny.
Yeah. You filmed that at Mount Asgard in Canada.
That's the place.
Yeah.
Yes. Of course, I wasn't there.
No, of course. It was a guy called Rick Sylvester.
That's the fellow.
Yeah. No, he did a great job. So then the opening titles come, and now you're in these titles quite a bit. So
I actually insisted on being in these titles. Mm. And they are, I think, to date, possibly the sauciest titles.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
To actually open a Bond. Now, they're all done by the wonderful Maurice Binder, who had a devil of a time, actually, when we were doing these title sequences, because the women are absolutely naked. And he spent a lot of time applying, I'll tell you what, this is a little stock trick that you probably don't know, but the women there had to shave pretty closely around their nether regions, and then had to have, actually, Maurice put, you know, Vaseline on their nether regions, so no stray pubic hairs would actually go into the shot.
Mm.
So all the women there are absolutely, you know, Vaseline'd up. And then I'm there. And I actually said, I don't mind going naked as well.
Mm.
And they said, no, Roger, we can't have that flapping around in silhouette on the screen. But we did actually record an alternative opening, because James Bond back in 1977 had quite a large gay audience and was becoming very, very popular. So we thought, why don't we give the gay audience an alternative Spy Love Me opening where it was just men. And so it was me, Desmond, and Cubby, and we stripped off, and we basically recreated that sequence.
Right.
And they used a little bit of sellotape for our John Thomases so they could go against our legs, because us leaping around doing squat thrusts and star jumps was rather off-putting, I believe.
Sure. Now, is it true that there was a rumour at the time, I don't know if this is true or not, but I'm so pleased you're here because I can ask you.
Yes.
There was a technician working on the opening titles by the name of Don Hong Kong.
Right.
Yeah, there was a rumour that Don got his head stuck in a monkey.
Right. Well, I believe I devote a chapter about that very incident in my book, My Word Is My Bond.
That's right, yeah.
Yes,
where we talk. But it was all in italics, so I didn't know if it was true.
Yes, that, and also that's the only bit of the book that was ghostwritten for me. Because sometimes my mind doesn't quite recall the exact events. I don't mind admitting it now. But a lot of My Word Is My Bond was actually ghostwritten by Rusty Lee.
Oh, wow.
Who is the Caribbean chef. But yes. She's an absolutely terrific writer and a really, really lovely old family friend.
Mm.
Yes. And, of course, you get the theme tune as well, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Nobody does it better.
Yes. Carly Simon, of course, sang it beautifully. But did you know that she actually only came in pretty much as a last-minute replacement?
Oh, I didn't. No.
Yes. It was originally going to be done by the Bay City Rollers.
Wow.
But they pulled out of it due to touring commitments. And then I believe it was briefly placed in the hands of Manhattan Transfer.
Wow.
Who had a bash at it, but apparently it was rather too heavy on the Brazilian bongos. So it was given to Carly.
Well, it's a delicate piece. You don't want to, you know, don't want to overdo it.
I believe it sets up the film admirably. Scantily clad. It's all rather, dare I say, erotic and rather playful.
Well, talking of erotic, this film's written by Christopher Wood, who was the author and screenwriter of The Confessions.
Of the Confession films, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I believe we really sort of gave that a little sprinkling of The Confessions dust into the film.
Mm.
Well, which is very my Bond.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, after the credits have passed, we see General Gogol again in his office. And he tells Triple X they'll need her to go to Cairo to investigate a lead on the missing submarine.
Absolutely.
And then drops the sad news that you, as James Bond, while you were having the ski chase...
I'm afraid I killed him, yes.
Yeah, you killed Sergei Barsov, Michael Billington.
Well, that of course, was Bond's job.
Mm.
And my Bond never instigated, violence. He just solved violence.
Mm.
I believe that's quite an important thing. I was very insistent with that with Cubby. We had real problems a few films later where I had to tip a man over a cliff, and I really didn't like the idea of that. That wasn't my Bond.
No. So then, of course, we get the beautiful sight, if you don't mind me saying so, of you stepping out of a helicopter...
Looking resplendent.
The full naval uniform.
Wonderful stuff. Commander Bond.
Mm.
Lovely.
Always love seeing Bond in the naval uniform. Doesn't happen enough.
No,
What's your opinion of the latest ones? Have you seen the last couple in heaven?
I think they're rather dreary.
Oh.
I think Daniel Craig is a wonderful actor, and he's got the physique of Bond, and he's got the demeanour of Bond, but he's got none of the joyous trappings of Bond. I believe there's a Bond for every era, but this era that Daniel Craig seems to represent is a rather sort of depressed Bond, who's rather at odds with who he is, which I believe is not the escapism that the audience wishes with Bond.
No,
Bond
sure.
is all about fun.
Mm.
And I believe I rang out as much fun as I could from the Bond lemon, whereas others took a completely different fruit to the role.
Mm. What fruit did you think Daniel Craig had?
I would say a sort of gone-off potato.
Gone-off potato, okay.
Yes.
Well, could you mind me asking while I've got you here?
No, of course.
What sort of things did you do for fun? Did you have any hobbies?
I pretty much used to ingratiate myself with the locals. So wherever we filmed, I just completely got involved.
Mm.
So I had a lot of fun, but hence I kept getting, kept having accidents. I mean, by the time I'd finished Spy Love Me, I'd actually come down with shingles.
Right. Yeah.
Which was very, 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 very painful. Mm. And we also got food poisoning when we were filming in Luxor.
Mm.
And that's entirely down to Cubby, I have to say. We were getting a bit fed up with the local fare. And Cubby decided to make an Italian meal for us all.
Mm.
But the canned tomatoes that he'd had shipped in from Cairo, I'm afraid, had gone off.
Mm.
And obviously he disguised the sauce with probably a lot of Tabasco and oregano. But the next day it was coming out both ends. And that was myself, cast and crew.
Mm.
There's a wonderful outtake of poor old Richard Keel, and who actually projectile vomits through his metal teeth, and you can see bits of pasta dangling there.
Oh,
I mean, it was an absolute hoot at the time, but he was very angry.
I bet he was.
Yeah, so we all had food poisoning. And then, of course, a little bit later, and I'll talk about that when we get to it in chronological order, is when I have my anus severely singed.
Well, I've written that down. We'll definitely talk about that.
You know, of course, yes.
Yeah.
It's an S-Pod thing, the podcast revisiting S Club 7's insane TV show.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone's binge-watched this, anyone who's not on drugs.
Thank you for bringing this into my life. It was honestly truly appalling.
Guests helped me analyse the show in more detail than anyone ever asked for.
It feels weird to me to say the phrase sex object in a show that was aimed at six-year-olds.
Do you think this is one of the problems with this show is that 7 is too much?
It's an S-Pod thing from Great Big Owl.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
So you meet Captain Benson, played by the lovely George Baker.
Wonderful man, wonderful actor.
Inspector Wexford.
Yes, and we used to have a lot of fun down at the Coach and Horses in central London, and we often used to drink the bar dry.
Mm.
Wonderful fun.
Mm.
Wonderful man.
Yes, no, absolutely. So then you're debriefed, you're shown the very overly complicated Polaris Operating Authority computer.
Yes, that's all the techno babble, and I have to say, I never really paid much attention to all that. I just did what I was told.
Mm.
I was far more interested in the knowing looks of the camera, the cheeky quips. I was really trying to make Bond my own at this point.
Yes,
and so the techno stuff, I never really paid attention to.
Did you like techno music?
I don't even know what techno music is even now.
Do they have, like, clubs in heaven? You know.
Yes. We have a Contiki bar that I go to very regularly and have a lot of fun there. The thing at the moment is sort of hard, angry rock versions of classical music.
Mm.
So we do a sort of like a Beethoven's Ninth, but we do it in 6 minutes of sort of heavy thrash metal.
Okay.
And that's a lot of fun.
So you're into thrash metal?
I love thrash metal.
Oh, I've never thought that.
No, well, it's something that I've just grown to love.
Mm.
I tell you who got me onto it.
Mm.
Sister Wendy.
Sister Wendy.
Sister Wendy was a massive fan of thrash metal. I think her favourite song was Skin the Pope.
Skin the Pope.
You've heard that. Yeah,
no,
Skin.
No.
I'll actually do a rendition.
Please.
It goes like this. Skin the Pope, 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 Skin the Pope. And that's it.
Wow.
She used to like that because, you know, it was rather cheeky and she wasn't supposed to like it. And that's the exact reason why she did.
So did you meet her in heaven or did you know her before?
I met her on the way up.
Mm.
Yes. Unfortunately, she was going the other way.
And
then about 2 weeks later, she was back again. So it must have been a blip.
I've been error, maybe.
Yeah, possibly.
Yeah. So Benson shows everyone the tracking data from the computer, showing the last course of the missing submarine. And you bring out an acetate chart.
Wonderful, isn't it?
Showing
that had
Russians.
Never been seen at that point.
What, acetate?
No.
Wow. But your chart shows the Russians also had the data, which means they can track British submarines and sink them. And the room is...
the room is agog. Yes, absolutely. So now we know there's a sort of third party at work here. This is the hot mitten that's gone into the muff of the Cold War, let's say. And we don't quite yet know whose hand is in that mitten, in the muff. And you're going to find out a little bit later that the hand is a rather ghastly one, actually.
Well, we find out in a moment, don't we? Yeah.
Yes, we do, because poor old Carl, he suffered from an affliction.
Yes, he's got flippers.
He had, well, yes, he had a webbed hand. Well, hands, I should say, plural.
Probably good for baseball, though.
Yes. I suppose he had his own catcher's mitt, as it were. He's the only man I know that could eat his breakfast from his own hands. He could have a bowl of cereal. I often saw him on set with a bowl of Shreddies cupped in his hand. I think he once attempted it with soup, but obviously it burned him, and he had nowhere to put the croutons. but yes, he did have a gift, you know. And once those hands knitted together, they were airtight. Yeah. I believe it was a family problem. I believe his mother had webbed feet, which is why she was such a good swimmer.
Of course. Well, he likes the water, doesn't he?
Absolutely. Yes. I have to say, Carl was absolutely wonderful. I thought he was a wonderful villain because his villainy is... I don't want to analyse it too much, but his villain is absolutely daft as a brush.
Yes.
And his idea is daft as a brush as well. Basically, he wants to destroy the world and live underwater.
Kurt Jurgens
was a wonderful man. And this was the first time that we'd actually steered away from an Ian Fleming book. We took the title, but this is the first time, The Spy Who Loved Me, where we saw where the plot was made up, which may be a little bit telling because it is a little bit silly, but I still think it's absolutely perfect Bond canon. The idea, I believe, was concocted when some of Jacques Cousteau's diaries were unearthed.
Right.
And the famous oceanographer and filmmaker. And it turned out that was Jacques' plan. He wanted, basically wanted the world to burn. And wanted to live underwater in some sort of giant beaver dam, I believe. Apparently, he was quite the odd man. And really, that's why he spent so much time down there, scouting for locations of places to live. And if he had his way, and he did have a lot of money, especially scientific grants, he really wanted to start nuclear war and spend the rest of his time underwater. I think things came a cropper when he was caught in London Zoo. And... I think he was caught making a glory hoe for the penguins. I believe he served time then. That's where the idea came from.
Because at this point, Carl Stromberg sat at his table eating some lobster with his mistress. When Beckman and Markowitz come in, he congratulates them on their submarine tracking device, but tells them someone has been attempting to sell the plans to competing world powers.
Absolutely. So there's a little bit of plot now being sewn in, and you get you'll get an idea now of how sinister Jurgens is. I believe he's one of the more sinister Bond villains, actually, because everything he does is out of revenge and spite. He'll just casually kill someone in a slightly elaborate way, just because he's bored.
Well, he does here. He kills his mistress because it turns out it's her.
Absolutely.
And he dumps her into a shark pool.
Yes, I was never fond of when women were killed in the James Bonds. I always believe it should have been the men. But there you go. But it did suit his character rather well.
Yes.
And it's a perfect Bond moment. The drop lift into the pool, the serene music playing whilst the shark casually eats her. Rather good fun, I thought.
Wouldn't you prefer if he'd had more... like giant mutated crabs or something?
Possibly. I always thought we could do something with electric eels. I thought that could have been fun. Maybe there could have been a funny moment where someone falls into the pool and because it's electric eels, they get an afro. but apparently that was poo-pooed early on. And then, of course, we had the joke with Jaws. because we had Richard Kiel as well. So the shark and the jaws connotation just really worked.
Yes. So after killing his mistress, he sends away Beckman and Markowitz with all their lovely money in a helicopter.
Yes. And then he blows them up.
Yeah.
Yes. Isn't that wonderful? Yeah. So he's such a villain. He's got exactly what he wanted, and then he doesn't want to pay them, so he just kills them.
Yeah.
You know, without so much as a buy or leave.
I can hear your pen quite loudly, by the way.
Oh, sorry about that. Yes.
That's all right.
I'm just doing a Sudoku. Well, I was just crossing one out, actually, because I don't understand what they are. But I'll try and keep my penmanship to a minimum.
Thank you, Sir Roger.
No, you're welcome.
So then he calls in his two henchmen. So you've got Jaws and Sandor.
Yes. Now, Sandor was a bit of a mistake, really, because he just looked like a sort of cheap, you know, wrestler from the East End.
Mm.
But he was actually a professional wrestler in real life. His death scene is rather good fun, I believe.
Mm.
It's a really nice bit of work there, the hanging onto the tie.
Yes.
And then Bond lets him slip. Wonderful. Yes.
So in Cairo...
Cairo was wonderful fun.
Mm, you arrive dressed as Lawrence of Arabia.
Yes, and we even use the theme.
Mm.
There's a wonderful shot later on where it's myself and Barbara, we're walking across the dunes. And there's a couple of shots where I drop my trousers for a bit of fun.
Did you?
Yeah, but they don't keep that in the film, obviously. Although it would have been the sort of thing that my Bond could have done.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, there was a wonderful bit where I bent over and showed Barbara my hieroglyphics, but they said, no, that doesn't quite work. Which I thought was rather funny.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But you go and meet your friend Sheikh Hussein, who you knew at Cambridge.
That's right, yes.
And he tells them that you need to go and speak to a man called Max Calver.
Max Calver, yes.
Mm. But first you have to meet a guy called Fekesh at his apartment in Cairo.
Wonderful. And of course we don't do the joke of Fekesh off.
No.
Which again, we should have done.
And the no doorbells joke. That would have been a good one.
That would have been wonderful, wouldn't it?
Mm. But first he says, you know, you've travelled a long way. Why don't you stay?
Yes.
And you say one of my favourite lines.
Go on.
When one is in Egypt, one should delve deeply into its treasures.
That's right. Mm. Wonderful. There are a couple of ad-libs I did. I think there's one where I said, can I fuck that one? And they went, no, Roger. And I went, no, you're absolutely right. That's far too coarse.
Mm.
Yes. And then there was one where I sort of like looked into camera with my tongue hanging out like a sort of rabid dog.
Mm.
Sort of, whoa. But they went, no, that's not Bond. So no. it was all subtle, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. So you go to Fekish's apartment. You are met by...
Felicia, yeah.
Yeah, Felicia. And all the time you're being watched by Sandor.
Absolutely. I'll tell you something about Felicia, because we had to kiss in that rather briefly in that.
Mm.
And unbeknownst to me, she had a condition which is known as a dead tooth.
Right.
That's when the tooth has rotted from the inside down to the gum line. The nerves had gone, but the stench that came out of that rotten dead tooth was quite overpowering, I have to tell you.
Really?
Yeah, there's a couple of scenes where I was physically gagging when I had to kiss her. I believe I came on set and I gave her at least a litre of mouthwash and just said, I'm not going anywhere near you until you deal with that tooth.
Mm.
But she couldn't get good dental work in Cairo at the time, so... she often used to eat her lunch by herself, and quite often downwind of us, thank God.
Thank God for that.
Yes.
But then Sandor shoots, and Felicia unfortunately jumps in... Well, fortunately, jumps in front of you.
Yes, and I was rather glad that that happened, because I have been known sometimes to use you know, women as human shields, which, again, is not something that I believe Bond would do. But in this case, she actually, she sort of takes a bullet for Bond.
And then you have a fight with Sandor on the roof, as you mentioned before.
Yeah, that took 3 days to film.
Did it?
3 days to film, yes. The stunt guy who was filling in for Sandor, who had to fall, was absolutely scared of heights. Wonderful.
And then, obviously, you find out that Fekesh is at the pyramids.
Now, a lot of the pyramid stuff is actually not filmed there. We actually had to film that on a set back in Pinewood. Strange enough, because when we were there filming in Egypt, I don't know if you know, but we had the Egyptian authorities following our every move, making sure that we weren't doing anything that was against the country or against the state or saying anything political, I should say.
Mm.
So we were looked very closely, Because there was an amazing shot, which unfortunately wasn't used in the end, where I'm hanging off the Sphinx nose and I look like a bogey, like a Bond bogey.
Mm. And why didn't they leave that in?
Cubby said, for fuck's sake, Roger, you look like a bogey. Mm. And so that was cut immediately.
Were you happy with that, or were you a bit annoyed? Or?
I was fine with it because I got some of my other quips in. So it was a case of try three or four things, most of them won't take, and then get the actual thing that you want into the film. So I learned that pretty early on with Cubby, is bombard him with silly ideas, and then the real one that you want to use, that's the one that you'll get, because he'll just do that to placate you.
Now, there's a bit here where Fakesh sees Jaws, so he runs off.
Wonderful Richard Keel.
The wonderful Richard Keel, yeah. So you follow them.
Yes.
And there's a bit here where they didn't get a shot of you. So they had to paint a picture.
This is the infamous, the blown-up picture photo stroke artist rendition of me. Mm. Which, again, there are two. I did two versions. I did one where I thought it'd be rather amusing if I was doing a sort of Bruce Forsyth pose.
Mm-hmm.
Like at the beginning of the Generation game. And there was another one which I thought maybe might ground Bond, where I was just stood bolt upright, but I was giving the henchman the finger, which I thought would have rather been very effective.
Yeah.
But they went for one of me sort of casually crouched against a rock.
Mm. And if you're listening on the last leg, you can use that again if you want to. So Jaws kills Fakesh.
Yes.
And then you meet Triple X and her sort of gang of men who you beat up quite easily.
Yes, that and Barbara is resplendent in this film, isn't she? She's absolutely beautiful. She's a genuinely beautiful, wonderful woman.
Yeah.
Of course, she had a sense of humour like a navvy.
Mm.
It was F this and F that.
Oh, really?
And until she was on camera, and then she was all sweetness and light.
Wow. Do you swear very often?
I occasionally say cunt.
Right. What's the occasion?
Often out of context, normally when I'm quite happy, which gets me into a lot of problems.
Sure.
I used to be in wonderful restaurants. I'd go to the Savoy and then I'd have a wonderful meal and I'd just go, cunt. And they used to think, oh, is something wrong? And I go, no, far from it. Actually, everything's right. apparently I was told I should keep my swearing in context.
Right.
So if I'm unhappy, say fuck or cunt, not when I'm deliriously happy, because apparently it will raise an eyebrow.
That was what you were famous for, of course, Roger.
Yes, I it got to a stage where I could raise my eyebrow or pretty much up to my hairline.
Mm.
And then what I often used to do for fun is I had an auxiliary third eyebrow that was on a piece of catgut that my wife used to thread through the house. And sometimes I could sit there and I'd be doing a crossword and someone would come in the room and I'd raise the eyebrow and it would go up to the hairline and then she'd pull the catgut and the eyebrow would come clean off my head and float above me.
Wow.
And we used to do that whenever, workmen were there or people we didn't know. They used to obviously have a wonderful anecdote to tell to their friends when they went to the pub.
Mm. That's extraordinary.
Of course, it did go badly wrong once.
Really?
Yes. The eyebrow was pulled too hard by my wife, and it fell onto a candle and then went up and did a lot of damage to the curtains, actually. And to a poor old delivery guy who was trying to escape, but he had asthma and fell right through the French windows.
Goodness.
Yeah, terrible.
Yeah, wow.
So after that, we stopped.
Of course.
We stopped, yes. We carried on a bit. I used to make my eyebrow go lower, but that apparently was horrific.
Mm.
It would go past my eye, downwards, past my nose and onto my chin, like some sort of like Hitler moustache that had slipped.
Yeah.
And it just didn't work because it was just odd.
Mm. The Mahaba Club.
Yes, wonderful music as well. Bum, 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 ba-dum. Fa-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-dee-bee-dee-bee-dee. Oh, I've got the deadly belly. I believe we used to sing that.
Really?
And then we were told to be quiet because the Egyptian authorities were hanging around.
Of course. Yeah, that's obvious.
I've got the Tommy Squid, silly bloody bugger, having couscous in the morning. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
But then we were told by Cubby, keep it down because we're being watched like sparrowhawks.
Mm. But you meet Triple X here, and it turns out you both know everything about one another.
Absolutely, yes. We've both done our homework. We've both boned up on each other.
Well, not yet. Yeah. But you're there to obviously meet Max Kelber. And she knows all about your past and even mentions your dead wife.
Absolutely, yes.
Which is a bit off, isn't it?
Well, again, it's quite nice to occasionally ground Bond. So, you know, the mentioning of Tracy, I believe, is quite important.
Before you can get any kind of deal with Max, Jaws murders him.
Ah, yes, wonderful. A lot of people were genuinely terrified of wonderful Richard Keel, but he was an absolute pussycat in real life.
Was he really?
Yeah, he was a wonderful, wonderful, kind man. Wonderful man.
Any anecdotes about him?
No, because as well as being wonderfully kind, he was actually wonderfully boring.
Right.
And he was one of the dullest men that ever lived.
Right.
And never said anything remotely amusing of worth remembering. Sometimes we often forgot he was there.
Right.
But a dear, kind, lovely man.
Right, good. Okay.
But a terrible bore.
Right. So as he drives away dressed as a telephone repairman, the tallest telephone repairman in the world.
Ever, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I believe it's in the Guinness Book of Records.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You jump in the back of his van.
I do.
Yeah.
Now, there's a bit of a continuity problem here because he believes that I'm there and does nothing about it as he drives across the entire country.
Yeah.
We only realised that very much after the fact.
Yeah, I guess you'd already filmed it, so...
We'd already filmed that, I'm afraid, so there's not much we could do about it.
No.
But, as I say, Bond is playful and fun. Sometimes continuity be damned.
But he drives you to Luxor and then just gets out of the van and walks off.
That's right. And you think, oh, well, that's the end of him then. I can get on with spying and, you know, having sex with beautiful women and doing my usual stuff. But then, of course, we have the fight. Wonderful fight sequence.
Yeah, where Jaws, unfortunately, pulls the entire construction site down on himself.
Yes, and then I got to do the ad lib, which apparently I got a little bit of a stick for in years to come after. I just go, Egyptian builders, which I thought was rather funny. I did do some alternative takes. I thought I actually did one where I went, oh no, he needs his mummy, which I thought was rather nice. And then the third one, I just went, prick.
Right.
And they went, no, that's not Bond.
No. That's not your Bond wouldn't do that.
No, my Bond wouldn't do that. So they kept Egyptian builders.
Couldn't you have said something like another luxurious building ruined?
Quite possibly, yes. There were many, I think at that stage, the cameramen were lobbing in their thoughts. Cubby had some ideas of his own. Barbara was throwing in her ideas. You know, Richard was saying nothing, as bloody usual. So we did at least 20 takes. But it was Egyptian builders that made the edit.
Of course. Well, it's the best one.
I believe so.
So then you get back to the van and Triple X is having trouble driving.
Bloody women drivers.
Yeah, that's pretty much what you say. While Jaws is ripping the van to pieces, and eventually you manage to get away.
Yes, and I love that sequence, the way he rips the... literally rips the roof off. It's fantastic.
And then, as you said earlier, you walk through the desert and the Lawrence of Arabia theme plays.
Yes, that's when I kept dropping my pants at that point.
Yeah.
Because it was a very, very hot set, especially filming in Egypt and Luxor, Cairo, etc. And, of course, it was terribly hot. So anything to just alleviate the tension at times, we would often... There were many, many larking around. Larking around. We had a thing called, which is in my book, My Word is My Bond, and it's actually called the Wanker Tapes. And that's when we, basically at the end of the run, we put together all the rushes of all the jokes and all the funny things that we got up to, and we just play them, and it stays on set. It doesn't go anywhere
else. Any Richard Keel in there?
No, we made sure, actually, when we showed that he'd already got on the plane and gone home.
Right.
No, we didn't really want him there, to be honest. Wonderful, wonderful man. Wonderful man. Dreadful bore. Dreadful bore.
So on the boat to Cairo...
Yes, wonderful. A lovely romantic scene between Bond and Barbara.
Well, a lovely, tender Marvin Hamlish rendition of the theme.
Beautiful theme, isn't it? Mm. Yes, absolutely.
With some saxophone.
First time that Marvin toned it down.
Mm.
Yes, because, we're getting very close to when he goes full-on flugelhorn in For Your Eyes Only, where he gets a little bit out of control.
Well, that's Bill Conti, of course, Roger.
Oh, is it? Oh, I often get both of them confused.
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah. So then you're about to kind of make a move on her, and she asks for a light for a cigarette and then blows smoke in your face.
Wonderful, isn't it? And then she's used some sort of nerve gas on me. And I thought it would be funny at that point to shit myself.
Mm.
Because that's maybe what would have happened if the gas...
You mean sort of loudly, audibly shit yourself?
I because of the way I fell unconscious, I turned my face away from the camera, but I was mic'd, so I did a sort of noise, which I thought would be rather funny, as a sort of wonderful little funny, you know, tiny little, a tiny little edit point, as it were. I just thought nobody's ever heard Bond fart, and I just thought I should be the first Bond to do a fart. I thought it'd be funny sometimes to kill a henchman. Instead of doing a quip, I just fart on their head. You know, like pick them up and then walk off shot. And I just thought that might make people happy. But apparently Cubby insisted, no. You know, I believe in A View to a Kill. I wanted to do a piss on poor old Patrick McNee, but they vetoed that as well. I just thought that would be a nice way to remember his character. You know, I believe he's called Tibbet.
Yes.
And I find him dead in the boot, and I just thought it'd be quite funny if Bond took his dick out and pissed on him. But again, they said context, Roger, context. And I just went, okay, you're the boss. But I think Bond films would have been immeasurably funnier if I got to fart on henchmen.
Sure. Yeah,
you know, no, or even fart in their face. I mean, there were ample opportunities where I could have farted on Drax, and that would have been very funny in Moonraker. But they said no.
And that's end of part one of this episode of Smirshpod. We'll be back later in the week with part two, so please stick around. But in the meantime, why not like, subscribe, review, enjoy, share, tell everybody you like, and, you know, why not even buy Thunderbook? Hey, why not? See you next time.
McDonald.
And I'm Ellie Gibson.
And this is our new show, Extra Life.
It's basically us talking to funny people about video games.
When I was a kid, it was Grand Theft Auto.
The Sinclair ZX Spectrum.
We talk about the games people remember from when they were kids and what they're playing now.
Guitar Hero.
The Last of Us 2.
Combat on the Atari 2600.
No, I love Pokemon.
Anyway, find us anywhere you get your podcasts.
Extra Life. GreatBigOwl.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.